The Culture Pop Podcast is brought to you by the law offices of Jacob Imrani.
Accident or injury, call Jacob Imrani, call Jacob.
Hey, it's Mace. If you or a friend or loved one is injured in an accident, the first person you should call is my friend Jacob. When I did this, Jacob was great. He helped me by talking through the next steps, which really put my mind at ease. When you're injured in an accident, you got to have an expert. That's why you call Jacob, just like I did. Call Jacob, 844-24-JACOB. That's 844-24-JACOB, or visit calljacob.com.
Call Jacob.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Culture Pop Podcast. I'm Steve Mason, along with Sue Kalinske. This is the show where we talk about everything in the world of pop culture, and this is a special episode. We're doing a watch-along series for the new Apple show, Sugar, starring Colin Farrell. Sue, how's it going? What's up?
What's up? Well, we have a visitor. Little Maxwell is sequestered on the chair.
Oh, he's very nice.
He's my little shadow.
Is he? Has he warmed up to Tom at all?
He's warmed up to him more, but he's still, as Tom says, well, you got your dog.
There you go. So, Sugar, I wanted to do one of these watch-along series for a long time, and I was waiting for the right show, and then I took a shot on Sugar, and I am really happy about it. This show is really beautifully made, great performances, and happens to be in a genre that I love, this noir genre that the show is shot at. What was your initial reaction to Sugar?
I loved it from the beginning, from the opening titles with the Art Deco look. I love the genre. I love Colin Farrell. I like that it's a bit of a twist on a gumshoe.
Yeah,
you know, he's kind of a detective with a heart of gold. You know?
He does have a heart of gold, yeah.
He's very sensitive. He loves dogs. He loves cats. He's James Bond without shtupping all the women.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. He speaks virtually every language from what we know. We heard him speak Arabic. We heard him speak Spanish. He is immune to alcohol. Alcohol has no effect on him.
You know, it's really crazy, and it goes against everything that I say I don't like to do, but I read a little bit about the show.
Yep.
And there's all these kind of theories of who he is and what we're going to find out about him.
Yeah.
And one of the things, and I don't know whether it's because the alcohol doesn't affect him, and then he has that weird kind of tick where his hand kind of twitches.
Yeah, it's almost like a seizure-y kind of thing he has, right?
So we're going to find out in shows to come what the deal is with that. But someone actually said that they were going to find out that he's AI.
Oh, wow. That would be weird.
And he's learned to be a detective because of all of this studying he's done in that genre.
That's an interesting theory. I don't believe that, but it's a really cool theory. But there is something superhuman about him. Like the immune to alcohol thing is one thing. One is that he took those chopsticks and he snatched that fly out of the air in episode one. I'm like, oh no, he's got special skills. There's something going on with him that is different, and drives a super cool car.
Blue,
baby blue convertible Corvette. Just really, really, he's just like tall, dark, handsome, heart of gold, really cool. And Colin Farrell is so good. He's great in everything.
Right.
I might have told you that I had dinner once with Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
And the nicest guy. The weird thing was, when we finished dinner, I feel like he asked us questions the entire time, as opposed to us asking him questions. So at the end, he was so generous with his time and probably wound up knowing more about us than we know about him. But just a really cool, something gentle and smart about Colin Farrell.
Yeah, I saw an interview that he did, and the guy who interviewed him was in the basement of his house, and he had turned it into a man cave, and it was really cool looking. And Colin Farrell, I guess he was in a space where his publicist's dog was there. So okay. he kept on picking up the dog, and he was very obsessed with the dog. The dog's name was Tom. And he just loved this dog so much. But he was so engaged with the interviewer about the room he was in and the cool memorabilia that he had. I just loved how gracious he was and how down to earth he was.
Yeah, yeah. So we have a missing girl. Mm-hmm. Her name is Olivia. And Sugar is hired by Jonathan Siegel, who's played by the great James Cromwell, to find his granddaughter. So if you look over my left shoulder, there's a Chinatown poster. Does this or does this not feel like the John Huston character from Chinatown, Go Find My Granddaughter?
Oh, so much. And all right, so the woman's name that's missing is Olivia. Her last name is Chandler. So you got the Raymond Chandler kind of connection.
Yeah.
The fact that James Cromwell was in L.A. Confidential, so he was in a noir film. And I just kept on looking for tropes, you know, for you know. So in I think it was in the first episode, they do a kind of a flash to old Hollywood, and there's a movie marquee, and Bonnie and Clyde is the film.
Right.
And Faye Dunaway was in Bonnie and Clyde.
Yes.
So
and was in Chinatown.
And it was in Chinatown.
Yeah.
So just, you know, just things. Oh, and also the floating in the pool was the William Holden character was found floating in the pool in Hollywood Boulevard. So
yes, yes.
Yeah. So it's
yeah,
all these.
I mean, these cutaways are like I was I don't know. You know, I don't know movies of the 50s and 60s in this genre particularly well, but like there's a scene, like he's driving a baby blue Corvette, right? It's apparently the same kind of car that Mike Hammer drove in the 1955 movie Kiss Me Deadly. I mean, there's so much thought and layers going on here that I think is the work of I mean, Fernando Morales is the director. He directed The Great City of God, the movie City of God, directed The Constant Gardener, which I think was Rachel Weisz and Ralph Fiennes. So he's a really great director. And this sort of subtle layering of these classic noir movies, black and white noir movies into the story, I think is an amazing, amazing touch.
Yeah, and especially the opening sequence, which is in black and white,
yep.
which is kind of, you know, and it takes place, it's in Tokyo. So it also, it made me want to go back and watch all these Japanese noir movies that I've never seen.
Really?
Because it's definitely an homage to the, you know, Japanese cinema.
Yeah, yeah, no question. So much of the monologue works for me. So much of the voiceover works for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like right on the edge of like maybe being a little, but it's like on the money. It's like, I love, he says, I don't like hurting people. The world has more than enough suffering without extra contributions from me. Finding people that are lost, bringing them back to those that miss them. That part of the job I like. And there, I think you summarize exactly who he is in the world. He's the guy who goes out and finds someone who's missing.
And he's one of these guys that is a departure too, because there's a sense of hope, you know, that the world is really a better place, you know? But this was one of my favorite lines. When he met Bernie Siegel, Dennis.
The father.
I always pronounce his name wrong.
Butsakaris, I think.
Butsakaris.
Yeah.
So he says after he storms off after their initial meeting, he sits there at the table and his voiceover is, he's hiding something, or at least I hit a nerve. I mean, being told to fuck off is usually a sign of progress, which is just a great line. And then with the dog that he ended up inheriting, when he was going out for the night, he looked at him and he said, don't wait up.
Yeah, don't wait up. I love that. I love that.
Which is fun.
By the way, episode one, the part of it that really, this is the scene that got me and really hooked me, was when he tried to help the homeless guy.
Yeah.
It was just so not what I expected. And he talks to this homeless guy named Carl. He has a dog named Wiley. And he agrees that Carl will go back to Milwaukee. He'll fly him back to Milwaukee, and he'll be able to take Wiley with him. And I was thinking about it. He said, Sophie is the person that, I don't know if it's his mom or his sister or his girlfriend or what it is, but call Sophie and tell her you're coming home. And in a weird way, he sort of reverse engineered finding somebody. He was trying to find someone for Sophie in Milwaukee who had disappeared on the streets in Los Angeles. And obviously, it did. He ended up with Wiley. Carl died or OD'd in that episode. But just the fact that he was willing to reach out in that really human, generous way kind of captured me and thought, I mean, you mentioned heart of gold. He really does have a heart of gold. Later, he goes to Melanie's AA meeting.
Right.
And, you know, when you go to somebody's AA meeting, it means you deeply care about. So the fact that he was there, again, heart of gold, that's one of the things we're finding with him as we move through the series.
I can't wait to find out who Jen was, because he keeps on saying that Olivia reminds him of Jen.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Was this a case that happened where, you know, it was a bad ending?
Yeah.
Was this somebody personal in his life that he lost?
Yeah.
So I'm real curious about that storyline.
Yeah, I am too. And I think that's going to wind up being key to the story, is who was Jen. It almost feels like, again, So it's my favorite. Chinatown's my favorite movie, so I know it inside out. And somehow it feels like, you know how at the end Jake says, or the officer says to Jake, "Don't worry, Jake, it's Chinatown." And it's like this big disillusioning moment. It feels like whatever happened to Jen is sort of it's the thing that he's haunted by, the thing he's trying to fix by finding this girl, Olivia. Somehow that resolves it. And he's warned off by multiple people. "I don't like this case for you," Ruby. And then we find out there's this gigantic secret organization of polyglots, which means they speak multiple languages. And we don't know if they're spies, or we don't know exactly what kind of organization this is.
Well, I think they're, because it was Bernie's son who was talking to the goon guy,
yep,
that he hangs out with, and he said something about it's a group of I think they're spies from all over the world who have made a pact to get together to do something good or bad. Because that meeting, and that's when I started to have a lot of suspicion about Ruby, because she kept on having these, like, she kept on coming downstairs and somebody was either going up the stairs with her to have a private meeting, or she was saying goodbye to somebody after she had the private meeting.
Right.
And then
right.
She has the private meeting with Sugar. And then, you know, that bad guy, he's such a great bad guy. What's his name? Eric Lang, is that his name?
Yeah, I think the character is Stallings, right?
Stallings, yes.
Yes.
So she is looking up all of his information online, and then she deletes it.
Yep.
And then she's talking to somebody that we can't see, and she says, "I'm worried that he's on to Stallings."
Yes, yes.
And it's like, well, what's this about? I mean, she's supposedly Sugar's friend. She's his boss.
Yep.
So there's something very, very fishy going
on
there.
You know what she's like? She's like Hugh in the James Bond movies, the one who gives out the assignments. Ruby is kind of that person who gives out the assignments for the secret society of polyglots. That's all. That's what I remember. The word polyglot, that sticks with me a lot. I think it's important. I looked it up. It does mean speaks more than one language, and that's certainly one of those things. I thought all in all, fantastic series. So the questions now, where is Olivia? What does her father know about it? What does her stepbrother know about it? Because they're after Sugar. We don't seem to know why They think she's just on a bender, or at least that's what they're saying. Why is it so important that the grandfather finds her? What's this secret society? Who is Stallings? What is Sugar getting on to? What are Sugar's seizures? Now, you say they're tics. I thought they were more like seizures.
Well, you saw him walking, and then you saw his hand just kind of like, it was like shook a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I know he kind of went down to the ground at the first time you see it, and you don't know what it is, but it just, I don't know. Yeah. But it's very bizarre. And then he injected himself with something too.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. He took a needle and injected himself right into the neck, which I thought that was the end of episode one. It hasn't come up again, but I don't know. Was that heroin? Was that painkiller? Was that illicit drug? I don't know exactly what it was, but he literally took a gigantic needle and just jammed it into the side of his neck. So we don't know what that is either.
Right. And also Melanie, Amy Ryan, who's...
She's so good.
She's so perfectly cast in this.
Yeah.
You know, she's like the right amount of sexy, but badass, you know, with some little bit of vulnerability.
Sure, sure.
She's so, so great. But you see her walk into Bernie Siegel's house.
Yeah, exactly. So is she in on whatever it is that's going on with Olivia? Yeah, there's some great mystery that's going to be uncovered here. And I think it all comes back to, you mentioned Jen. You know, at some point he says, this girl, this case, she reminds me of Jen. And I think that is going to be significant as we get towards the end of the story, that this is somehow repeating a case that didn't go well. Like, if you were to ask me now, is he going to find Olivia and is everything going to turn out okay? My answer would be no. No. Do you think so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be good.
No, I don't. But it's going to be good to watch.
But it'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
happens, it'll be good. It'll be good. You know, in some perverse way, you know, I kept on thinking of that HBO series with Brian Benben, Dream On.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
they use that same style of like, accenting moments where he was fantasizing with black and white clips of,
that's
of
right.
TV shows. I mean, you know, that was a kind of a comedic version, but it reminded me of that.
Well, listen, this is going to be great. If you're watching the show Sugar, we will have a new episode of Culture Pop after every one of their shows. So that means this is technically it's April the 13th on a Saturday. So this is for the first three episodes of Sugar. Then next week, we will do episode four, and we'll go all the way through the end. And I'm excited to do another one. So you got to get ready, because there's going to be a watch-along for House of the Dragon this summer.
Oh, okay.
Look at you. Okay, I'll do it.
I'll do it.
You'll love it. I promise you'll love it. I've never steered you wrong, have I?
I'll learn to love it. You know, my old writing partner started to watch Game of Thrones like after everybody, you know, was into it. And she's someone, you know, she's very, very picky. And I was kind of surprised that she watched it. And she said, it's great.
It is great.
You got to watch it. So
John Ireland was the same. John Ireland, I don't do dragons. I don't do medieval. I don't do. And then next thing you know, he's completely wrapped up in it. So you'll definitely like it. Hey, listen, if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please take a second and subscribe to the show. Leave us a 5-star review and leave us a rating and all that stuff. We appreciate that. And then if you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button, subscribe to the channel. You can give us your review of Sugar in the comments section or any take on exactly what's happening, any take on what we've said about the show. Maybe you've got a different opinion. Hit the like button and just scroll down and leave us a comment. We will react to those as we move along on the show. Sue, it is great seeing you. And we will see everybody next time on the Culture Pop Podcast.